Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with 94-year-old Francis Asbury of Albuquerque, New Mexico, where you'll find a photo of him in a Navy uniform on the veterans wall at the Paloma Landing Retirement Community. You won't hear his first name, though. Ask the activities director, Aaron, or any of the other residents who are probably listening right now on our affiliate KIVA in Albuquerque, and this 94-year-old is simply Asbury. What we're about to learn is that this Tulsa, Oklahoma native is very fortunate to be alive. He's going to take us back to December 19th, 1944. His squadron, VPB 106, had received new PB-4Y2 privateers that would be used for future bombing and patrol missions, but the radio man and gunner took off that day with 14 others in a war-weary B-24. In addition to the normal 11-man crew, there were four others simply trying to put in their four mandatory hours in the air to pick up flight pay. No one had any idea how tragic that day would become.
Well, we were out probably a little over 300 miles from Hawaii. The number one engine caught on fire, and we're going to have to go down. And I'll tell you a story, and you can... I had a real good buddy on there, and when we found out we were going to go down, we all had life jackets. And he came up to the flight deck, and he said... He didn't have one. I mean, we didn't have a spare. We looked around and couldn't find another one, and later on we did. And instead of staying at the radio, I had my second radioman get on, and I took the life jacket back to him in the back, and I was standing up when the plane hit. So I have no idea how I got out. I must have gone out head first.
So I want to get a sense for this being on this plane, because you've flown all these missions, and as you're telling me, you really haven't had any scares.
No.
Right? You haven't run out of gas. You haven't had any rough landings. You haven't been shot at, really, by at least not by enemy aircraft, maybe from ground fire.
Any aircraft.
So you're getting the ack-ack from down below.
Right.
But you hadn't been shot up?
We only got hit once really good. We had a hole in the tail about that big around.
About 18 inches in diameter?
Yeah.
That's big enough. That's getting hit pretty good.
Well, apparently the shell went through and did not explode.
Good thing, or you wouldn't be here.
That's right.
So that had happened. That was your closest call to this point.
Right.
But now you're in this B-24. The engine's on fire. And is your captain on the radio telling you to prepare to evacuate?
No, you don't bail out.
You're going to try to make a water landing.
You have to. You
know,
when you're over water that far out, you don't ever bail out. You'd have 11 guys strung over 11 miles.
All separated.
All separated.
Yeah.
It's your only chance of survival is to stay together.
So he tells you, prepare for a crash landing on the water. But you figure out there's not enough life jackets, and your good buddy didn't have one.
Yeah, and I figured I had time to take it back to him.
And what was his name?
Red Vandergriff.
So you go from the top turret to where?
Back in the back part of the plane.
Toward the tail.
Yeah, by the two... two open 50s.
So you've just handed him the life jacket, and you don't have time to prepare for crash position.
Handed him the life jacket, and that's the last I remember.
You just blacked out. So the plane hits, and you're basically knocked unconscious.
Oh, yeah.
So you have no idea how you made it from inside the tail of that plane to the water.
No idea.
Where were you when you came to?
I was in the water, and I saw the life raft, and Red was in it, and I was able to manipulate and get close enough, or he was getting close enough to me to where he could pull me in.
Wow.
Actually, really being hurt, I was the only one on the plane that was hurt. I'll take that back. We lost 8 guys out of 15.
Oh, you had 15 that day.
Yeah. We had 4 guys that went over aboard ship, and they had not had in their 4 hours of flight pay. You got to fly 4 hours a month in order to earn flight pay. So they went up in order to get 4 hours. Yeah, 3 of them went down with the plane, and 1 of them got out.
So of the 15 on board, 8 are killed. And you come to, you're floating in the water. I mean, if you had taken longer to come to, you might not be here, huh? You had a life jacket that was keeping you afloat?
I had a life jacket on.
I mean, did you even know what had happened or who you were or where you were?
Oh, yeah. I knew what was going on, and I knew we were down and that we were in trouble.
So you see Red in the raft, and you're able to kind of paddle your way over?
Mm-hmm.
But you're hurt. you can already feel that there are some injuries.
Oh, yeah. I've got my face smashed in. I can't see out of my right eye. I've got a broken arm, compound fracture of this arm, and I lost a lot of teeth.
Lost a lot of blood, I bet.
Probably, yeah, lost a lot of blood, but mainly it was my face. And this compound fracture of this bone and this bone here to where?
Around your eye, the orbital bone?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
So my eye sunk down, but there's compound fracture of both of them. And my nose, my upper jaw was shattered. My lower jaw was shattered.
So basically, your face looks like it got sledgehammered.
Yeah. I'll show you some pictures.
Well, I'll make sure we put those at hometownheroesradio.com so everybody listening can look at them and marvel at how good you look at 94. This is crazy. Could you feel all that pain, or were you kind of numb to some of it?
Actually, I was numb, really. The only thing that hurt was my arm. Anytime I moved it or anybody touched it, it hurt. As far as my face and all these bones that were broken in there, I had no pain.
Wow.
It's amazing.
So you get to the raft, and Red helps you into it?
Oh, yeah.
And can you see anybody else?
See the other guys hanging on the side.
Of the raft?
There were always three of us in the raft. I was in the middle and one on each end. It was only a two-man life raft, really.
But they put you in the middle because you were the most severely injured.
Yeah. The other guys hung on the side. Uh-huh. And then they all took turns switching around over a couple of days.
And what time of day was it when you crashed?
Very nice day.
What? Middle of the day, like afternoon or something?
I would say very early afternoon.
Uh-huh.
Right afternoon.
I imagine you had some perspective on this. Because you've already done a whole tour in the Pacific flying these patrols where you're looking for enemy ships and you're looking for submarines. And I imagine occasionally you were looking for downed American airplanes, right?
Yes.
Now you guys are a downed American airplane.
You're right.
So you're dependent on someone who had been doing what you were doing to find you.
Hopefully.
Well, and that's my question. How much hope did you have? Knowing what you'd seen and what you were familiar with, did you think you guys would get picked up?
Absolutely not. When you're 300 miles from land in a two-man life raft, three-man life raft, you don't expect to get picked up. You're just lucky when you get spotted.
If you get spotted.
If you get spotted, you're just lucky.
And you could get picked up by the other side.
No, I don't think so, because we were north of Honolulu, and I don't think there was any activity in there except by the Aleutians.
So there was no threat of Japanese picking you up. There's just a threat of not being picked up and maybe sharks.
Right. We didn't have any sharks, fortunately.
But you didn't know that.
No. But our hope was just being picked up.
When the sun set that first night, was that kind of a downer?
Yeah, I guess so. You're just sitting there wondering, are you going to get spotted?
Had the pilot had time to send out an SOS?
Oh, yeah, we sent out.
Or you probably did, huh?
And then my radioman continued. Yeah, they had a pretty good idea of where we were at the time. Except one thing was bad about it was a rough sea, and you really move around a little bit. I guess it was the third. We went down on the 19th, and I think it was the 21st. We spent two nights out there, and then this Navy PBM happened to come by. We had a smoke bomb, lit the smoke bomb, and the pilot spotted it.
Wow.
His name was Glenn Welch. We actually contacted him after it was all over.
Wow.
The most beautiful sight in the world is being out there and seeing a plane several miles even with you and banked towards you. Then you know you got something going.
Yeah, this is incredible. And I've got a lot of questions for you. One on that smoke bomb. Did you have more than one, or was that the only one you had?
I'm not sure.
Because if that's your only one, you better make sure they see it.
That's right.
And you just told us you said it very matter-of-factly, but this is a big, scary, insane deal. You spent two nights, overnight, twice, in the water, in this life raft, nothing to eat or drink, right?
Well, we had one can of water, and it was opened, and my second radioman took a sip of it. If you've ever taken a drink of water out of a can, you know it's not good. And he took a swallow of it and said it wasn't good, threw it overboard.
Oh, man.
Believe it or not.
Wow. And we all know what happens if you drink any of the salt water.
Oh, yeah.
You're just accelerating the inevitable.
Yeah, you don't drink that.
So overnight, two nights, in severe pain, all these broken bones, your face smashed in, your arm rendered unusable, not knowing if anyone's going to pick you up, and there were three of you in the raft and four hanging on?
Mm-hmm.
How did you guys get through that? What kinds of things were you talking about, or how did you support each other to survive that ordeal?
Well, there was a lot of quietness. I had a funny thought. When they came back from the first time, you don't have any place to spend your money overseas. So when we came back, I had pretty good chunk of money coming. And during that 3 or 4 months that we were back in the States, before we went back out, I spent a lot of money and I had a good time. And one of my main thoughts was that that was a pretty dumb thing to do because my parents didn't have a lot and they sure could have used that money.
Mm.
And then my second thought was, they're going to get my insurance. So it's okay now.
Wow.
I'm glad I spent it.
Were some guys starting to panic?
No, I don't think there was any. It was all pretty calm and very quiet. You're just sitting there or listening, hoping to hear a plane. And the plane that spotted us could not land because of the rough water. And there was a radio ship pretty close by, I think. And anyway, from the afternoon, this weather ship got to us, and it was still daylight, because I have pictures of that. They got to us and picked us up, and then later that night, we transferred to a destroyer, and the destroyer took us into Pearl Harbor to the hospital.
What kind of shape were you guys in by the time you got picked up?
Well, we were in pretty good shape, I would say, overall. Nobody was probably near death and scared out of their wits, but it was really a pretty calm thing. We knew what was going on. We just hoped that we'd get picked up.
Had you, as that time went on and on and on, and those hours dragged on and on, did you have that thought, maybe I'm never going to be picked up?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think any of us thought we ever would be, because, like I say, you got a small life raft 300 miles from land. What are the chances of finding it?
Yeah, that's beyond the needle in the haystack.
That's right.
And so were you resigned to not making it? Were you praying that you would?
Well, we were still hoping, yes. We were hoping that somebody would spot us. But you never give up hope in a situation like that.
And I guess not to fast forward too much, but it seems relevant. I've just got to ask. How has that impacted the way you faced challenges in your life in the 70-plus years since? When you say you never give up hope in a situation like that.
Well, basically, you kind of wipe it out and go on with your life.
Uh-huh.
I've never dwelled on it. I've never preached about it. I've never, most people don't care.
Well, I know the people listening right now do, and I certainly know your three daughters do, because they wouldn't be here if you hadn't made it through that, and your grandchildren. But you had a long way to go here. So your plane goes down. You're lost at sea for more than 2 days. Your parents think you're dead, and you end up in the hospital. And on Christmas Day, while your folks are back home in Oklahoma thinking they've lost a son, what are you doing?
I'm getting operated on.
They're trying to fix your face.
Mm-hmm. But fortunately, there was a nurse there that went to the same high school that I did, that she was about 2 years ahead of me in school, maybe three. But she was a nurse there, and she happened to be on the ward where they took me, and she wrote my parents and told him I was okay.
Wow. I wonder what your mother's face was like when she got that letter.
I have no idea. No idea.
So his family knew he survived, but the long road to recovery was just beginning. When we come back, we'll hear how long he remained hospitalized and some of the ways his injuries have impacted his life ever since. For photos and video of this resilient 94-year-old, check out hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll be right back after this.